In his book, What Good is God? The author Philip Yancey illustrates what it's like to live a life of faith. Yancey writes about the 2004 Ukrainian election, in which the reformer Viktor Yushchenko challenged the entrenched party and nearly lost his life for it. On election day, the exit polls showed Yushchenko with a comfortable lead. But through outright fraud, the government reversed those results. Yancey writes, that evening, the state-run television reported, "Ladies and gentlemen, we announce that the challenge of Viktor Yushchenko has been decisively defeated." However, government authorities hadn't taken account of one feature of Ukrainian television, the translation it provides for the hearing impaired. On the small screen insert in the lower right-hand corner of the television screen, a brave woman raised by deaf-mute parents gave a different message in sign language. "I am addressing all the deaf citizens of Ukraine. Don't believe what they say. They are lying. And I am ashamed to translate these lies. Yushchenko is our president." No one in the studio understood her message. But inspired by the courageous translator, deaf people led what became known as the Orange Revolution. They text messaged their friends about the fraudulent elections, and soon other journalists took courage and likewise refused to broadcast the party line. Over the next few weeks, as many as a million people wearing orange flooded the capital city of Kiev to demand new elections. The government finally buckled under the pressure, consenting to new elections, and this time Yushchenko emerged as the undisputed winner. Yancey makes the following point. Our society is hardly unique. Like the sign language translator in the lower right-hand corner of the screen, along comes a person named Jesus, who says in effect, "Don't believe the big screen. They're lying. It's the poor who are blessed, not the rich. Mourners are blessed too, as well as those who hunger and thirst, and the persecuted. Those who go through life thinking they're on top will end up on the bottom. And those who go life feeling they're at the very bottom will end up on top. After all, what does it profit a person to gain the whole world and lose his soul?" We've been thinking about the life of faith in this series on Isaac. There's blessing and grace for God's flawed servants as they live the life of faith. That's the primary message in today's passage. There's blessing and grace for God's flawed servants as they live the life of faith. God has promised Abraham that his descendants will grow into a great nation. God is now fulfilling that promise through Isaac, Abraham's son. Isaac must live by faith in God's promises, just as his father had to. And God blesses Isaac in the life of faith, even though he's weak and makes mistakes. So three headings: Isaac's faith is tested, Isaac's faith fails, and Isaac's faith is blessed and tested again. Firstly then, Isaac's faith is tested, verses 1-6. Verse 1, "Now there was a famine in the land, besides the previous famine in Abraham's time." When Abraham experiences famine in chapter 12, he flees to Egypt. This is not good. God has told Abraham that he and his descendants will be blessed in the land of Canaan. They're not to run away to Egypt. For Abraham, when he did this, it was a failure of faith. It was one of two occasions when he pretended Sarah was his sister and that they were not married. In other words, he left Sarah vulnerable to the Egyptians to save his own skin. It's not Abraham's finest hour. Here in chapter 26, verse 2, the Lord appeared to Isaac and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Live in this land where I tell you to live." Abraham and now Isaac are to live as people of faith, people of the promise. They are to believe God's promise They're to believe that God's blessing is on their lives as they live in obedience to God in the land that he has shown them. Verse 3, stay in this land for a while, and I will be with you and will bless you. For to you and your descendants, I will give all these lands and will confirm the oath I swore to your father Abraham. God is renewing the promise he made to Abraham. I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky, and will give them all these lands, and through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed. Remember the big picture. God is planning to send a Messiah from the nation of Israel. And so Abraham's family are set apart to be a people of faith. The nation that comes from him will be a special people, God's chosen people, Israel. They will be a people of faith. So right now, at this moment, Isaac has to make a decision. Will he be a person of faith? Will he believe God's promise? Will God prosper him in the promised land? Or, like his father before him, should he run off to Egypt to find food? It would be very understandable if he did that. We all need food. Famine is no joke. But to Isaac's credit, he takes God at his word. He's going to follow his father's best moments. Verse 5, because Abraham obeyed me and did everything I required of him, keeping my commands, my decrees, and my instructions. That was Abraham at his best. And Isaac is at his best in verse 6. So Isaac stayed in Gerar. Gerar is the region of the Philistines, but it's part of the promised land. It's part of the territory God has promised to Abraham. Secondly, Isaac's faith fails, verses 7 to 10. He was doing so well. But verse 7, when the men of that place asked him about his wife, he said, she's my sister, because he was afraid to say, she is my wife. He makes exactly the mistake his father made. He thought, verse 7b, the men of this place might kill me on account of Rebekah, because she's beautiful. Isaac has the faith to stay in the promised land, but he doesn't have the faith to live with integrity there. Verse 8, when Isaac had been there for a long time, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, saw Isaac caressing his wife Rebekah. So Abimelech summoned Isaac and said, she's really your wife. Why did you say she's my sister? Isaac answered him, because I thought I might lose my life on account of her. So no matter what might have happened to Rebekah, no matter that she might have been raped or married off to somebody else, no matter about any of that, Isaac was protecting himself. Isaac was lying to save his own skin. And the pagan Canaanite comes out of this encounter with more honor than the man of God. Then Abimelech said, verse 10, what is this you have done to us? One of the men might have slept with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us. Thirdly, Isaac's faith is blessed and tested again, verses 11 to 34. God is so gracious to Isaac. He has lied. He has let God down. But God has promised to bless Abraham and his descendants. Therefore, verse 11, Abimelech gave orders to all the people, anyone who harms this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. How blessed is Isaac. Even when his faith fails, God is gracious to him. That's so encouraging, isn't it? Even when Isaac's faith fails, God is gracious to him. And isn't that how God treats us? Our faith fails. My faith fails. And God is still gracious to us. And God prospers him, verse 12. Isaac planted crops in that land, and the same year reaped 100-fold, because the Lord blessed him. This is what God is like. He makes a promise, in this case, to bless Isaac in the land, and God keeps that promise. Verse 13, the man became rich, and his wealth continued to grow until he became very wealthy. He had so many flocks and herds and servants that the Philistines envied him. So what will happen now to this blessed man of God? Will he stay blessed? Will God keep his promise? God will certainly allow Isaac's faith to be tested again. The testing of faith and the blessing of faith go together. I'll say that again. The testing of faith and the blessing of faith go together. So verse 15, all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the time of his father Abraham, the Philistines stopped up, filling them with earth. This is a test of faith. Then Abimelech said, verse 16, move away from us. You've become too powerful for us. Isaac had outstayed his welcome. This is another test of faith. So verse 17, Isaac moved away from there and camped in the valley of Gerar, where he settled. But life is not straightforward. He is blessed. He is obeying God's promise. He is in the land of the promise, but God allows tests of faith. Verse 18, Isaac reopened the wells that had been dug in the time of his father Abraham, which the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham died. And he gave them the same names his father had given them. Water was obviously essential for life. Water was a precious commodity. This is hard to understand when you come from Wales. Our friends Michael and Margot Leach live in Letchworth, but in 1974, they lived in South Wales for a year, and it rained every day. It's hard to appreciate the value of water when you live in that kind of climate. But this is in the Middle East. Water is precious. Verse 19, water is fought over, the way people today might fight over oil. Verse 19, Isaac's servants dug in the valley and discovered a well of fresh water there. But the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with those of Isaac and said, the water is ours. So he named the well Esek, because they disputed with him. Esek means dispute. Then they dug another well, verse 21, but they quarreled over that one also. So he named it Sitnah, which means opposition. He moved on from there and dug another well, verse 22. And no one quarreled over it. He named it Rehoboth, which means room. And Isaac says, verse 22b, now the Lord has given us room, and we will flourish in the land. From there, he went up to Beersheba. And God speaks again to Isaac. He reaffirms his blessing. Verse 24. That night the Lord appeared to him and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I will bless you and will increase the number of your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham. Isaac is blessed. He will be blessed in the promised land. His descendants will be a great nation. So verse 25, Isaac built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord. There he pitched his tent, and there his servants dug a well. Isaac understands that he must live the life of faith. He understands that God must rule through his word. Isaac understands that God must be in charge and that his promises can be trusted. Meanwhile, verse 26, Abimelech had come to him from Gerar, where the Huzath, his personal advisor, and Phicol, the commander of his forces. This is a high-level delegation. This is an intimidating delegation. Isaac asked them, verse 27, why have you come to me, since you are hostile to me and sent me away? They answered, we saw clearly that the Lord was with you. So we said, there ought to be a sworn agreement between us and you. Let us make a treaty with you, that you will do us no harm, just as we did not harm you, but always treated you well and sent you away peacefully. And now you are blessed by the Lord. Isaac is greatly blessed. He's prospering. The king wants to be his friend. So what will Isaac do? Verse 30, Isaac made them a feast, and they ate and drank. Early the next morning, the men swore an oath to each other. Then Isaac sent them on their way, and they went away peacefully. Isaac is enjoying the blessing of peace with his neighbors. Verse 32, that day Isaac's servants came and told him about the well they had dug. They said, we found water. He called it Sheba, which means an oath, or seven. So this may have been to celebrate the oath Isaac had sworn with Abimelech, or this could have been the seventh well. Whatever, to this day, the name of the town has been Beersheba, which means well of the oath, or well of seven. Now here's something you don't see every day. In the wake of Ireland's landslide victory to allow same-sex marriage, journalist Matthew Paris, who calls himself a gay atheist, publicly laments the church's wishy-washiness. Paris writes, even as a gay atheist, I wince to see the philosophical mess that religious conservatives are making of their case. Is there nobody of any intellectual stature left in the church to frame the argument against Christianity's slide into just going with the flow of social and cultural change? Paris continues, can't these Christians see that the moral basis of their faith cannot be sought in the pollster's arithmetic? Would it have occurred for a moment to Moses, let alone God, that he'd better defer to Moloch worship, because that's what most of the Israelites wanted to do? It must surely be implicit in the claim of any of the world's great religions that on questions of morality, a majority may be wrong. But this should be vividly evident to Christians in particular. They need only consider the fate of their Messiah and the persecution of adherence to the early church. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you, says Paul. Well, okay, it was actually Jesus who said that, not Paul. But Matthew Paris raises some tough questions for the church. The life of faith is never easy. For Isaac, he has to struggle to get water. He has to struggle to trust God. He fails to trust God. He lies about Rebecca being his sister. But in the end, Isaac shows himself to be a man of faith, a man who lives the blessed life of faith. For us, the challenge, as Matthew Paris points out, is to live for Christ in an atheistic and immoral society. There'll be huge pressure on us to compromise, huge pressure to go with the flow of non-Christian society. But the blessed life of faith is the life of obedience to King Jesus and trust in his promises. Shall we go together further along in this life of faith? Shall we pray for one another and help one another to do this? One of the downsides of celebrating your 100th birthday is that you might not have many friends left to sing you happy birthday. In May 2015, Sheffield's Winnie Blagden turned 100. And though she had no surviving family members and just a few friends, she did receive a huge quantity of cards. In an attempt to encourage her, the local BBC radio station sent messages out via social media, notifying people that Winnie was hitting the century mark. The station says its Facebook call out for birthday cards was seen some 6 million times. Over 16,000 birthday cards came in to celebrate her special day. In the midst of a news cycle that often features the evil of the world, it's good to be reminded that there's kindness here too. And for the follower of Christ, is this a little picture of heaven? The chance to be welcomed home by millions of cheering but unknown loved ones. And the Saviour who says, well done. We must decide what we're living for. Ease and pleasure in this life, or the reward of heaven for a life based on faith, a life based on trusting God, taking him at his word, and living all out for Christ, for his approval, out of love for him. Because we treasure Christ above all things. There's blessing and grace for God's flawed servants as they live the life of faith. Will you be one of them? Well, that's the end of my sermon. Thank you for listening so patiently.